I don't get mad, I get even. Have you ever said it or felt like that? It's clear one of the strongest human emotions is the urge to strike back at those that we feel have harmed us. TV and movies are made all the time featuring payback and getting people back and revenge. And as Americans, we love it. We eat it up. And even among us Christians, sometimes we eat it up. I know I get too caught up in those kind of movies myself. And the thing about it is, it's not new. Desiring to pay people back to get revenge isn't new. Turn to Genesis 34. This is why I didn't want you to go to 1 Peter yet. In Genesis chapter 34, we have an example of Levi and Simeon, the sons of Jacob, getting revenge for the mistreatment of their sister Dinah. And what they did is they got all the men there to become circumcised because of the leader's son had abused their sister, and they were going to get payback. And they put on a smile and a happy face and pretended all was good, and then set him up to kill them. And so when they were suffering from the circumcision, Levi and Simeon went and killed all the men of the city. And Jacob, instead of saying, "Yeah, that's right, we showed them, we got those evil guys," Jacob recognized that revenge was not good. In verse 30 of Genesis 34, we read this: "Then Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, 'You have brought trouble on me by making me odious.'" He said, "You make me stink. Making me odious among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites, and my men being few in number, they will gather together against me and attack me, and I will be destroyed. I and my household." So he's telling Levi and Simeon, what you've done will cost all of us, will cause problems. Revenge doesn't end. It only begins or continues, perpetuates. But in verse 31, they said, "Should we treat our sister as a harlot?" So we're not going to let them get away with that. We're going to make sure they pay for what they did. They stank, and they made Jacob stink. And you know, we could spend hours looking at evidences and incidences of revenge, but you get the picture. And you know the movies, probably one in particular that you're familiar with that comes up. For everybody, it will be different. Well, after walking us through how to live, Peter, going back now to 1 Peter chapter 3, Peter's been talking about how to live for some time now in submissive lives, and he sums it up here in verses 8 through 12. Verse 8 of 1 Peter chapter 3 says this: "To sum up, all of you be harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, and humble in spirit." And notice the contrast between Levi and Simeon and Peter here. "Not returning evil for evil or insult for insult, but giving a blessing instead. For you were called for the very purpose that you might inherit a blessing." Remember, that goes back to Abraham and the promise to Abraham. "In you, God would bless Abraham and his descendants, and in Abraham and his descendants, God would bless the world. For you were called for the very purpose that you might inherit a blessing." In verse 10, then he quotes from Psalm 34 in verse 10, "The one who desires life to love and see good days must keep his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. He must turn away from evil and do good. He must seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are toward the righteous, and his ears attend to their prayer. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil." And so as Peter is wrapping up this section, his book, where he's been talking about humble lives and submissive lives, and he's been talking about being submissive as sojourners, citizens, servants, spouses, these are all the things that we've looked at in previous lessons. He puts a bow on it. He sums it up with a call for us to be a blessing, for us to fulfill what God had said Abraham was supposed to fulfill. And in a sense, or in a fact, that's what God's proper purpose and plan was, is that we would receive the blessing that Abraham was bringing, and that is salvation through Jesus Christ, and that we would then in turn share that blessing, spread that blessing to the world around us by being different people. Unlike Simeon and Levi seeking vengeance, we are to be a people that bring a blessing. And so this tonight's lesson in 1 Peter 3 verses 8 through 12 is about how to be a blessing. And it's interesting that, you know, as I pointed out in a lesson a few weeks ago, looking at all of the Old Testament passages in 1 Peter, we could do two or three or four lessons, maybe more, on just the Old Testament quotes, either direct quotes, partial quotes, or just plain simple references to the Old Testament. Peter is filled with this Old Testament writing. But not only is he filled with this, he's also, as we're going to see, led by the Holy Spirit, saying the same thing that Paul effectively says in Romans chapter 12. Romans 12 is an expanded version of what Peter says here in chapter 3, verses 8 through 12. But here in this section, he returns to Psalm 34. Back in chapter 2, look in chapter 2 of Peter, and in verse 3. In verse 3 of 1 Peter 2, he says this. He talks about being newborn babes, longing for the pure milk of the Word so that you may grow in respect to salvation. Verse 3 is from Psalm 34. If you have tasted the kindness of the Lord. That's Psalm 34, verse 8. Which is an appropriate verse for encouraging people who are about to suffer. As persecution. Interesting thing, keep your marker there in 1 Peter, we'll come back to it, but I want to turn back to Psalm 34 and look at the heading. It's an interesting heading in the text there that is thought by most scholars that David wrote this in the time when he was running from Saul. And you may not remember this, but if you don't remember it, just follow along with me. Let me tell you the story. Remember how at one point David was fleeing from Saul, and everywhere he went, it seemed like Saul's soldiers and people were looking for him. And so the only place he felt safe was going into the home of the Philistines and going to the house in the city of the Philistines and hiding. And remember, this is the same David as who's exposed by the Philistines. Wait a minute, this is the guy that they sang, Saul has killed his thousands and David has killed his 10,000 of us. And so he felt safer there than in Israel. It was where he felt safer. But God protected him and preserved him. This is, if you recall, is where he had to pretend to be crazy. Now, I don't know, If your text has a prescription or a little summary of the book or of this information, this one says this, a Psalm of David, when he feigned madness before Abimelech, who drove him away and he departed. And so this is a psalm by a person who's in a tight spot. Peter is writing to people who are about to be in a tight spot because of their faith. And so that's why this psalm is a good psalm for that. He was running from his life when he went to Gath. And how desperate did he have to be to go there? But as you read through the psalm, and we're not going to take the time to read through Psalm 34, but if you take the time, go back and read it. And you'll see this is a psalm by a man who, despite his situation, despite is seeming to be at the end of the rope, the end of the line, just had nowhere to turn safely, still puts his faith and trust in God. And that's why Peter, I think, likes this psalm, because he's writing to people who are going to be very quickly facing severe trouble because of their faith. His heart rested on God, and so Peter recognizes that and encourages us to rest on God. And also as they go into this suffering, part of the thinking is going to be the self-defense. We've got to defend ourselves. We've got to find a way to fight back against this persecution and this evil and just show them that we're not going to roll over and accept this. Well, God's saying, you better be careful how you respond. Very careful. And instead of being the kind of people that you can't stand, and being just like them, evil like they are, we're to be a blessing. We are to be a blessing. And this blessing, the idea, starts with the idea of a right attitude, and it leads to right action. So it begins with our way of thinking, how our minds process our relationship to God, to the world, to our brothers and sisters in Christ, and to the world around us. We must begin with the right attitude, and then when we have the right attitude, we'll follow it with the right action. So let's look at this idea of being a blessing in attitude, and we're just going to look at some of these words here out of verse 8. Let's go back and read verse 8. To sum up, all of you be harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, and humble in spirit. So the idea here of harmonious, this is the idea of having one mind, thinking alike. And these are a bunch of passages or translations of this and things that come from other passages in the Bible where it talks about being like-minded, being of one mind, having a unity of mind, of thinking the same thing. That's the idea that Peter is presenting here. That's the goal for them, and this is how they need to approach it. And this is a consistent struggle with Christians. We're aware of this, of one simple fact, and that is every Christian will stand before God as an individual. The Lilac Road Church of Christ won't appear in the presence of God as a group. So God sees the group, but the individual is the one that stands for Him. And so we tend then to think individually instead of congregationally from time to time. And we also know that our saving relationship with God is individual. I am baptized into Christ. You are baptized into Christ. The individual is baptized into Christ. The church is not, except by virtue of the individuals having done that, having been baptized. We're added to the church by being saved. Important to understand that, because a lot of times people get these, so they think they're so close, they end up flipping them. We are added to the church by being saved. We're not saved by being added to the church. That's the institutional concept. The institutional concept is that you go to the congregation or you go to the organization to be saved and let the organization do all the work and tell you what to think and do. You go to the Lord and you're automatically added to His body when you become a Christian in baptism, and then you join yourself to a local congregation, which is the only level of authority for collective action in the New Testament. But here's the problem with that. Sometimes that lends itself to us not being able to get along with each other. Especially if you don't say and think the same things that I think. Or, to be more accurate, I think 90% or more, I'm just kind of guessing here, winging it here, but a large percentage of the fights that happen between brethren isn't about doctrinal truth versus doctrinal error. And not to make light of that, those issues are important. We've been studying that in Timothy. Paul's saying if they're teaching false doctrine, turn them over to Satan. Don't let them be a part of the church. But 90%, a large part of the time, fights between brethren are not over truth, but over how you said it versus how I would say it. You didn't use the same words that I would use. Well, did they mean the same thing in essence? Well, maybe, but you still need to use the same words that I used, is the mindset. I've talked about that before in the word police. And I've dealt with and people who are quick to correct what they see as an inaccurate way of saying things. They just don't like the way, and a lot of times it's not so much that it's wrong, it's just different from what a way that they're used to hearing it. We need to learn to be more patient with brothers and sisters in Christ and listen to what they say, compare what they say to the Scripture, and think of it like the difference between one version of the Bible and the other that may use different words. We talked in this morning about 1 Timothy and that first word translated chapter 2, verse 1. There's entreaties and supplications and so forth. It has all those different words, different translations. It's the same meaning, same idea. So we need to be very careful about that. Let people use the words they prefer. Don't try to make people conform to you. Y'all sat through enough of my classes. You know I had to fight that myself. And I appreciate y'all's patience with me on that. Because we have to be very careful about that. Sometimes it may be a poor choice of words that do lead to false doctrine. And that doctrine has to be rejected. But let's be sure we understand what's being taught. And then when it's incorrect, correct it gently. Now, I said that Romans 12 is a kind of a commentary on this or an expanded version of this. Romans chapter 12, verse 15 says this, or 16 says this, be of the same mind toward one another, live in harmony with each other. And so that's one of the things that Paul is saying in Romans. It's exactly the same thing that Peter is saying here, just different words, but the same idea, same thinking. The next thing is the word sympathetic. Sympathetic in 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 8. And sympathetic is one of those interesting words. Just from sympatheos, that's the English word, comes straight out of Greek. Sim is with, pathos or pathology is suffering. So it's the word, that's the idea of suffering with. That's one, and that's the Greek word, but you know, that's our English word, sympathetic. But you know what the actual word in the text is? The word for guts. It's have emotional attachment to. It's splanchnon. Right? So good splanchnon is the Greek word for intestines. Because for them and their thinking, that's where you get a knot in your stomach when things are upset, when people are you're having trouble. So that's what he's talking about there. That's the usage there. So he said, have that sense of anxiety or care or tender care for people. Think of them in that way. So you suffer with people. Now, Romans chapter 12, verse 15 says it this way. Same kind of idea. Different words. Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. And that requires getting out of ourselves and just whenever someone is happy, be happy for them. Be glad that whatever it is that they have, instead of being, I wish I had that, or being jealous or just aggravated because they're successful, be happy. And when they're sad, be very, very sad with them. Weep and rejoice with those who weep or rejoice. The next word is brotherly. Let's go back to 1 Peter 3, and I'll have these Romans up here on the screen. Verse 8 says, to sum up, all of you be harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly. The brotherly is an interesting word. There's a city named after this. Anybody know what city that is? Philadelphia. That's exactly right. Philadelphia. Philadelphia is the word there, and it's the idea of family affection with brothers. And so it's the affection that you have for a brother. And so we are to be brotherly toward one another. We're to have that close family affection with our church family and with others as well, that we share that with others. That's the attitude we have in our approach to other people. That's the way we think about people rather than hatred or just indifference. Romans 12, verse 10, be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Give preference to one another in honor. So again, Paul and Peter are saying very much the same thing here in Romans 12 and here in 1 Peter 3. So that's the attitude we have. Next word is kind-hearted, which is the idea of compassionate, tender-hearted. And I have to correct myself. This is the word for tender mercy. This is the word for stomach. Merciful. Colossians 3:12 says it this way. Be so as those who have been chosen of God, holy and beloved, put on a heart of compassion. So, intestines of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. So, sorry about that. I have to correct myself in the middle of my sermon. This is the word that is about the intestines. So, be a blessing in attitude by being kind-hearted, having tender feelings toward others. So you're sympathetic, you're brotherly, you're harmonious, and you are kind-hearted. And then the last one he says here in the text, and humble in spirit. Humble is the idea of, and I hate it when dictionaries define a word with the word, having a humble or lowly opinion of oneself. And the idea here is of a deep sense of one's littleness. I'm not that big a deal. We really have to understand in life, no matter how accomplished we might be, how smart we might be, how whatever it is that we might be, that people would look at and say, that's good. Don't let it go to our heads. Don't get egotistical about it. Keep a lowly mind. And it, Romans 12 again. Do not be haughty in mind, but associate with the lowly. Do not be wise in your own estimation. So, again, we are to be like this attitude of humbleness and this approach to people that puts them first. The idea of humility is one of those things. Humility is a difficult thing to grasp. It's like catching a butterfly. As soon as you get it, you end up crushing it. So you got to be careful about how you catch humility. You know, you don't want to sprain your shoulder patting yourself back on the back for being humble. That's a very dangerous thing to do. Ben Franklin said this in his autobiography: in reality, there is perhaps no one of our natural passions so hard to subdue as pride. Disguise it, struggle with it, beat it down, stifle it, mortify it as much as one pleases. It is still alive and will every now and then peep out and show itself. You will see it perhaps often in this history. In other words, from him. For even if I could conceive that I had completely overcome it, I should probably be proud of my humility. It sneaks up on us, doesn't it? We have to be careful, beware of oozing pride in our self-righteous declaration of our humility. Did you hear about the group? There was a group that used to nominate people for Most Humble Person of the Year award. And they finally stopped because the winners refused to accept it. They wouldn't even come. You know, so it makes sense. They just quit having to give it. And if you showed up to accept it, then you disqualified. So that's the issue of humility. So that's the attitude. This is the attitude or approach that Peter is encouraging for people who are going to be facing persecution, hatred, cruelty. The attitude we take as Christians in the face of that is to be harmonious, empathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, and humble. And then that leads us to the action. If we're a blessing in attitude, it will show in the way we act, the way we treat each other. Beginning in verse 9, he begins to discuss the attitude or the action. So here's your attitude, verse 8. Verse 9 is your action. Not returning evil for evil or insult for insult. So these are the things you don't do. But giving a blessing instead, for you were called for the very purpose that you might inherit a blessing. So if you want to inherit a blessing and you want to be a blessing, here are the things you don't do, and here are some of the things you do. First thing there is the right action. You're going to desire life. This is out of Psalm 34, verse 10. For the one who desires life, to love and see good days. This is the idea of pursuing spirituality. If you're going to do this, then you can't be the kind of person who returns evil for evil and insult for insult. And then in verse 11, he says, we must turn away from evil and do good. Or he says, one who desires life to love and see good days must keep his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. So no matter what anybody says about us, we cannot respond in kind. No matter how negative, how ugly, how nasty it is, do not respond in kind. Romans 12, verse 14 puts it this way. Romans 12, I didn't put this on the screen, so turn over to Romans chapter 12 and verse 14. Paul, again, echoing effectively or preceding Peter. I think he wrote actually before Peter. But in Romans chapter 12, verse 14, he says, bless those who persecute you, bless, and do not curse. Again, this is not going to be easy. It's going to be very difficult, but this is the action that must come out of the right heart that has the right attitude. Don't be the person known for the barbs and the insults. Somebody insults you, you snap back with something just great put down. Be the opposite of that. Everything I heard about Jared this past week, he was the one that was a blessing with kindness and goodness to people. Be careful in our speech, the things we see and say and do. Turn away from evil. Say good words. Turn away from evil and do good. Those are the things he says here that are the actions of a person who has the right attitude. So, Peter's summing up his instruction to people who are getting ready to go through suffering and persecution. Get your mind right and get your life right. And getting your mind right means having the right kind of attitude. And getting your life right means doing the right things and not giving in to the desire to get vengeance or to get payback for someone that's hurt you or insulted you. Be a blessing. And so that brings us, as we wrap our lesson up, with this question. Are you a blessing in attitude and action? And this is a very key and crucial individual question. Am I a blessing to people? Do I bring encouragement and joy and peace into their lives? Or am I a cloud of negativity? Kind of person that I make people smile when I leave instead of when I come in the door. Which one is it? Now, all of us have different personalities, and not everybody's going to be as funny and you know, somebody not as unique as a Jerry, but not everybody's going to be like that. But all of us can work to be like that to the best of our ability and work at it. And work at it. Make sure we know the attitude we're supposed to have and the kind of actions and that we're supposed to present in our lives and work on doing it. And guess what? We will be a blessing. Well, that's our lesson for this evening. If you're not a Christian, you need to become one. Because you can't be a blessing. You may be a good person. You may be a kind person. You may be the kind of person that people enjoy being around. But if you're not a Christian, all of that's going to end at the end of this life. If you want that to carry on into eternity, become a Christian. Or if you are a Christian and haven't been these things, and need to work on your attitude and your action. If we can help you do that, let us know. If it's something you need to work on privately, get to work. Get busy being a blessing. If we can help you with that in any way, please come while we stand and while we sing.